Is this the happiest song ever written?
Could be.
One of them.
It's hard to be in a bad mood when this is jamming. It's either this one or the Jackson 5.
Yeah, I Want You Back.
Yeah. Come back with that one next or go out with it next. Hank and Kelly hanging out with us for another segment. So I heard you guys this morning talking about it, but let's do it here in the DGS. Sort of a postmortem on the primaries.
Well, it appears to me that the extremes in both parties in Missouri lost to the moderate. Now, that's relatively speaking,
sure.
Right? I mean, there's both Cori Bush and Wesley Bell are progressives. Both Kehoe and Ashcroft are conservatives. But that's what it seemed like to me. I thought it was a pretty good night for more moderate thinking. And I'm thrilled that we're going to have a change in Congress. And I'm thrilled that if there's going to be a Republican governor, it's going to be that one.
You know, I think the turnout was higher. I know the Republican statewide turnout in Missouri was historically high. And I haven't looked at the Democrats, but I suspect with the congressional race here, it was high here. And, you know, when you get more turnout, it kind of diminishes the impact of the folks on the furthest fringe. So, and I think we saw some of that happen on Tuesday.
But you guys have been preaching now since I've known you.
Yeah.
No, if you want to get rid of the extremes, vote in the primary.
Yeah. Show up.
Yeah. And I was very gratified that Kehoe won. He was a client and a friend. And I think he'll be a really good governor. So, you know, that was rewarding. We do have the guy for Secretary of State that wants us to hand count the ballots, though.
Mm.
And we've gotten kind of spoiled here in Missouri because we get our election results on election night. 10 o'clock, 10:15, you know it's over. Mm-hmm. You got the numbers. If we go to hand counting ballots, it's going to be days, if not weeks, before we have election results. So election night's going to be a big nothing.
And it's a real popular issue, and it's all for a fallacy. I mean, we have good elections here, but they're down there passing ridiculousness to try to prove to you that they're not, so they have something to run on.
Is that from the 2020 fallout?
Totally. Yeah. 100% out of the Trump fallout. I've never seen the amount of money and resources
come into
one congressional district.
Yeah.
You live in that district, don't you?
I mean, my gosh, millions, right?
Yeah, about $18, $19 million. I'm still getting the mail. sent to my house. Yesterday, I got another 4 or 5 pieces of mail.
That wouldn't happen if your company would have done
that. Yeah, they'd hired me to do that. I wouldn't have been a problem. But at the same time, I'm also hearing the lamenting of it. Oh, it's all this outside money that's come in. That's the same outside money that helped elect Cori Bush and Kim Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody really likes the outside money, especially when it comes in and beats you.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. We had an outside money fight here in the city of St. Louis and AIPAC won.
Cori Bush had kind of a bad loser meltdown there.
Oh.
What do you think happens with her? Where does she go now?
I said this morning that I think her 15 minutes of fame are up. I mean, we met her, meaning all of us got to know her.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, starting today with the Michael Brown death and ensuing riots that took place. Then she put together this grassroots progressive movement, but kind of became the face of it. Well, there was also somebody else on that same ballot, that same election, and his name was Wesley Bell. And what an interesting story that now 10 years later, we're seeing Cori Bush go and be taken out of the district and lose primarily for her behavior that has nothing to do with the district. She was up in Washington, D.C., being this progressive, putting the spotlight on her, and forgot what it was all about.
Yeah.
That's the exact thing she accused Lacey Clay of.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I thought that the Bell's ads were very effective.
Yeah.
They were, because he had a lot of material to work with. And she really could have had that seat for life if you just kind of
kept it between the rails.
Just do the politics.
Did the work.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? Constituent service, I don't think was great there. And, you know, you've got to be political enough so that you can win elections and keep your folks supporting you out there.
Does Crystal Quaid and Ray Hartman have a prayer?
Well, anyone has a prayer whose name is on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
But it is definitely an uphill battle in Missouri for Democrats, whether it be statewide or in that particular congressional district.
When and how did that change? Because when I was first voting, we were a very blue state.
I guess the change started with, John, you're the historian here, but I think it kind of started with the whole a term limit stuff around 1992, 94, going from there, we started to see the shift from there being Southern Democrats and the Democrats ruling rural Missouri to slowly but surely the Republicans taking over. And then while we have that subplot of what was going on in Missouri, we also have the way that we're doing elections right now where everything's federalized. Hmm. I mean, if you listen to the things they're talking about, even in the county council race, immigration, what do they have to do with immigration? Nothing. We federalized everything. And so as a result, we've gotten more stringent in party lines and the Democrats have a hard time competing there.
We were a Democrat state. Until I stopped running for office. But, you know, what happened here was Missouri was actually one of the last of the states to flip. If you look at the southeastern part of the country, those states, they became Republican about a decade before we did. And by Republican, I mean down the ballot. Nixon carried the state, and we were the bellwether for presidential races. Only Adlai Stevenson beat Eisenhower the second time. That was the only time in the 20th century that Missouri didn't go with the winner of the presidential election. But the Nixon campaigns, and then, you know, Carter comes back and wins, and really with Ronald Reagan, who ushered in a wave of statewide Republican wins in Missouri, Kit Bond getting elected that cycle. And Democrats had a majority of the congressional delegation, but Republicans were strong in Southwest Missouri and St. Louis County, ironically. And the Democrats were everywhere else. So what happened was culturally, the southeastern part of the state and the northern part of the state, culturally, were always conservative. Conservative Democrats, they were very pro-life. And they began voting Republican statewide in the 80s and some in the 90s. And by 2000, that started to percolate down the ballot. And they're voting now for Republican state reps and Republicans in the courthouse. Counties like Scott, where Sykeston is, you wouldn't find a Republican in Scott County. And now you can't find a Democrat there. It's the same people, same families. It's just the politics change. And term limits exacerbated the change at the state legislative level because all of those people that had been longtime office holders in 2002, they're out.
Would Illinois be Missouri if not for Chicago?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. And Chicago is just such a dominating force in numbers. And the collar, at one time, the collars around Cook County were pretty reliably Republican. You go back to Jim Thompson as the governor and Jim Edgar.
Big Jim Thompson
and Jim Edgar. And Republicans would carry downstate and the collars around Cook. Well, the collars are now all Democrat, and that's a massive number of people, and there's just not enough folks.
Yeah, so it's not unique to Missouri what's happened. The blue states have gotten bluer,
right,
and the red states have gotten redder, and that's where I go with this argument of we've federalized everything. Mm-hmm. Even the arguments at the library and school board are about federal issues, and I think that...
Do you see that changing anytime soon, or is that a function of the media?
Or the device in your hand. I mean, I think the biggest function of what I've watched in politics is people used to have to come and answer questions. And now, if you're a politician, people like John and I, now we kind of feel differently, but people like John and I advise them, if you don't have to deal with the media, why would you? If you can always put out your own communications to your own world and your own echo box, and that's what we're living in now.
So taking it to the national and following up on that, the big thing that Trump is hitting Kamala with is that she's not talking to the media, she's not taking interviews, she's not taking questions. Valid criticism?
Yeah, it works until it doesn't work. I think what she's trying to do is slide to her convention so that she can get the rest of that springboard launch. But eventually she's going to have to show up on 60 Minutes or someplace and answer in some questions. She cannot hide in the basement, if you will, like Joe Biden maybe did in the last election.
Yeah, I think her campaign team, she's got a good team there, much better than the folks that were running Biden. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to take full advantage of this honeymoon period. They're doing it. They're doing it effectively. And now they're leading into the convention. They're going to get a spike out of the convention. But then Labor Day comes. And I don't think the election is over yet, but if the Trump folks can't figure out a message, and if they can't figure out a disciplined message and stick to it, then he's going to lose.
Don't you feel like, I mean, at one point everyone was watching American Gladiators, and then we got tired of it. And that's kind of what it feels like with Trump, that he's still, not only is he stuck in 2015, it's 2015 on steroids. He's doing what he did all those years ago, but now he's just doing it to the nth degree. And it, other than the people who he has, the MAGA people who love everything he does, it just feels like it's falling flat, even with me. And I've been very upfront that I don't care for Donald Trump. Won't vote for him again. I did the first time, but I wouldn't do it again. But I'm not a hater. I don't passionately hate the man. I just find him sort of boring now.
Yeah, there's been not much of an effort to expand the appeal there. And the Vance pick was a lost opportunity. I actually think the Walz pick was a lost opportunity.
I heard you say that this morning.
Yeah, but, you know, they've been content to run these base turnout elections, and it just may not be enough. So, but we'll see.
So, were you a fan of Shapiro mostly because of delivering Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of him necessarily, but he would have been the easy choice here. And it would have sent a message to the folks in the middle that they're not going to kowtow to the progressive wing with everything. And so there would have been some subtle marginal benefit to that. But the real benefit of Shapiro was if he could deliver Pennsylvania. If you look at Real Clear Politics right now, and you take all of the toss-up states out, and whoever's winning today, you assign the electoral votes, Trump wins today. And he's carrying Pennsylvania today. Now, all the momentum's on the Harris side, but Trump would win if the election were held today, and the Democrats cannot win without Pennsylvania. So if you could have locked that up with your VP pick, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Why didn't she?
Who knows? There's reporting that she was very comfortable with Walz, that they had a personal rapport. That could be it. There's obviously the concerns.
Seems like he's charming everybody.
Yeah. The concerns about Shapiro and being pro-Israel. They could have been a problem on the left flank. But, who knows?
All right. Thank you, boys. Have a great weekend.
You bet.
See you guys.
See you guys.
Hey, DGS. This is your friend Danielle. I have been listening for 10 years, mainly as a podcaster. And that's one of my favorite parts of the day when your podcast downloads to my phone. Andrew could tell you that I'm very disappointed when there is no show to download. But I love the show. I love you guys so much. Dave, I get it. And thank you so much for making me laugh every day.
And we love Danielle.
Really sweet. Thanks, Danielle.
If you want to leave a message like that, simply go to the Odyssey app. Then you go to the KMOX page, then you'll see Listen Live, and next to it you'll see a microphone icon. If you don't, you have to update the app, no big whoop. And when you do, you just click on the microphone and you can leave us a message up to 60 seconds. If you don't like it, you can redo it. Send it to us. It'll go straight to Andrew, and we'll put you on the air. And if you have questions for us, we're going to do a new segment called Ask the DGS, and you can ask us anything you want to ask. And if we feel like answering it, we will. And there you go. Stairway to Kevin.
Sure. A couple things. There are a few things I wanted to toss into the mix, but I wanted to start with a quick sports thing because I thought this was an interesting comment from Kevin Durant. So we were watching the men's semifinal game in the studio yesterday. We didn't talk about it because we didn't want to spoil it for anybody that was going to watch it later on in the day, but they got a scare. I mean, they legitimately almost lost to Serbia. That came down to the final couple minutes, big comeback, all of that. But Kevin Durant afterwards was asked about playing for Team USA and patriotism and things along those lines. And he just, to me, it's like a one sentence answer, but it said a lot. And I think it rings true. He said a lot of BS happens in our country, except he said it full out. He said, but a lot of great things happen too. And just kind
of leave it to Kevin Durant.
I know. And just to build off of what we were just talking about with Michael Kelly and John Hancock about how, you know, everything has become federalized. Everything's a big issue because the big issues are what drive people's anger, and anger is what motivates people. We all focus on the BS, whatever we perceive as the BS. I wish it was more about the great stuff, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the great stuff outweighs the BS, but the BS gets 10 times the coverage, 10 times the attention. And we blame, this is something I wanted to get into the other day, but we blame, and by we I mean Americans, not any individuals. We blame TV networks, radio hosts, the media. The media is giving consumers what they show they will buy.
Nothing more, nothing less.
So if you're listening to a radio show or you're watching a TV news network, they are doing what they're doing because people are watching or listening, and that's how you make money in the business. Newspapers are doing what will sell papers or subscriptions online. So when we think about blaming media people, the truth is it's us. Everything is us. We don't participate in primaries. How many times have we heard John and Michael talk about that over the years? We choose not to do that. We choose, half of us choose to not vote even in a presidential election. We purchase the various media products that we do, whether it's, you know, I mean, again, you're not buying your time on CNN or Fox, but their advertisers are buying the ratings, and you watching is what gives the ratings. So they're going to give you what you want. We're like the hamsters. Or what is it? What was the experiment? Was it monkeys where they could, if they pressed a button, they would get...
Rats in the Skinner box.
The Skinner box. That's what I was thinking of. Where you're going to get the drugs every time you push the button. Well, we're addicted to rage. We're addicted to anger. And then we blame the people for giving us what we keep demanding and showing them...
Good point.
...we want.
Mm-hmm.
And all of, I took all of that from Kevin Durant's quote, yeah, because he made a good point. Yeah, there's a lot of BS, but we're so focused on the BS.
But what about the argument that if the rats in the Skinner box are only offered drugs,
yeah,
they're going to take drugs.
Yep.
If they were offered something else, that if there were real alternatives, maybe we would make different choices?
Maybe, but I mean, we forget the physically addictive qualities of the drugs, right? Well, emotional addiction exists, right? You get a rush from that anger, and that's what feeds people's patterns, right? Whether it's, you know, an endorphin rush, whether you're chasing the high from, you know, sky jumping because there's a high in that experience. I'm a speed junkie. I love speed. So that it's a minorly addictive quality, but you're addicted to that experience, right? You get addicted to video games if that's what makes you have fun. You get addicted to various things. So many people are addicted to as much anger as they can get, mm-hmm, and that's what they keep going back for. So we got to, if we don't control it, it's not going to change. Ooh, baby.
Great weather, great music, been a good show so far. Dave Murray joins us. Hello, Dave.
Hello there. Fantastic weather.
I mean, difficult to improve.
Yeah, you can't. This time of year, It almost feels like October 1st.
It really does.
That will be the rule, especially when you wake up in the morning, you're going to go, oh, where's my sweater? I think I might need a sweater.
Like,
you don't say that very often in August.
Upper 50s, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Man, oh man.
Man, oh man is right.
Love it.
Okay, couple of things. First of all, we all know the days are getting shorter. Sunset this weekend will be right at 8 o'clock. So we got that going for us. Also, the Perseid meteor showers are peaking this weekend. I think we're going to have some clouds around Sunday night, which will be the peak. So let's take a look on Saturday night. Look up a little bit to the north. It's one of the best showers of the year. Also, what's left of Debbie is a big rain producer over the northeast part of the country. That'll be going out to sea here in about 2 days. Also, I have a real interest. There's a little cluster of clouds deep in the Atlantic. And this is where we kind of watch long-track hurricanes. And I think this one could really develop into something. So let's think after August 15th, maybe even after August 20th. But in that window, the 15th to the 20th, we could be looking at a major hurricane along the East Coast.
Hmm.
Just something to think about.
Yeah.
Just because that's what I do.
And then the fall forecast is the 23rd, is that right?
That's correct. The 23rd at 3:30. I'm progressing along. I got basically September, October done, and at least where I stand right now with it.
Which of the seasons is most difficult, Dave?
Winter by far. I mean, winter is so difficult. Now, I think about the stuff all the time. But once we do the fall forecast on the 23rd, I will kick into gear on the winter fairly quickly. I do like to see how October unfolds for the winter forecast, because mm-hmm. October gives us lots of clues of what to expect in January, February, March.
And given the spring rain or lack thereof, how should our colors be?
Fair.
Okay.
It's just fair, because we've been up and down. We've had, obviously, lots of wet weather, but we've also had dry weather. We're actually in a little bit of a drought right now, mm-hmm. tiny drought. Mm-hmm. But that makes some stress on the trees. So I would say fair, and that peak usually comes late October to about mid-November.
You know what I did? This was probably stupid, but I only wasted about $50-$75. Given this stretch of 7 to 10 days we're having with the lows in the 60s and the highs in the 80s, I threw some grass down, little overseeding.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Why not? Birds love you. They just love you.
Yeah, they really do.
I was gonna do that too, but then I would have had to do something.
Yeah.
You know, doing something gets in the way a lot. It's like, never mind.
Yeah, I would have had to figure out.
All the things I could have accomplished.
Doing something gets in the way of doing something.
Oh, I have a little, hold on, let me find this thing here. Americans need 60 lazy days a year. And I have a breakdown of what science says is a perfect lazy day. Want to hear it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
3 hours of doing absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. 3 hours of just sitting and enjoying your living space, which I'm not sure how that differs from doing nothing.
But
3 hours of watching movies and television. 2 hours in bed, not sleeping. 2 hours of napping.
Yeah, you're talking.
Yeah, 2 hours of napping. 2 hours of scrolling on your phone. 1 hour of eating, 1 hour of reading, 1 hour of listening to an audiobook or a podcast, and 1 hour of dreading the next day.
That all sounds really boring.
I'm doing all of those things
really?
At the same time all
Let's
day.
Let's do this. How about just 8 hours of video games? We'll throw in the hour of the napping and like 3 hours of eating. How's that?
And some listening to heavy metal.
Well, that's
right,
part of the video
the
games.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's, you know what? Rach is right. That's actually how I go to sleep.
Rach, how would you change those around?
I'm like you. I don't understand the difference between doing nothing and then
enjoying your
living space. Yeah. So that's 6 hours of basically doing nothing.
Yeah.
I would fill most of that with like some, I don't watch a lot of like TV, but like YouTube or being on my phone.
TikTok.
Yeah, I need to be.
So this is more of an evening thing for me, but one of my favorite lazy things is turning on something I've seen before.
Yeah.
Laying on the couch and just sort of zoning in and out.
Yeah, that's
not
that's
having
pretty,
to pay attention.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
I have YouTube videos that I've seen like 20 times,
yeah.
And I know exactly how they're going to go, but they're like my comfort.
Oh, yeah.
Videos.
I love things like My Beloved Ancient Aliens or William Shatner's Unexplained. And I've seen some of the episodes so many times, I'll find myself sort of drift off and you wake up and you know right where you are in the episode. I like that.
It's always Giorgio with his shoulders like.
Yeah. headlines
brought to you by Schnucks. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app. So a new poll is looking at Americans' views on euthanasia. Just over 7 in 10 Americans, or 71%, believe that doctors should be allowed by law to end a patient's life by some painless means if the patient and his or her family request it.
I don't know that I would choose it or need it, but I have the feeling that in 20, 30 years when I would be at that age, it's going to be very prevalent.
I think so too, because at the same time, doctor-assisted suicide has slightly less but still majority support, as long as they are terminal patients living in severe pain and who also request to you know, have this done. So I think it will probably be a thing in the next 20 or 30 years, like you said. Let's see. Harris and Walls are selling camo hats. And they are selling like hotcakes. The hats have garnered nearly $2 million in sales so far. And this is all because whenever Kamala Harris called Tim Walz to be her running mate, he was wearing a camo hat and everyone kind of, you know, the internet kind of ran with that.
Yeah, he's a big hunter.
Yes.
Big bird hunter.
The hats are available on the campaign's official online store. They originally had 3,000 hats that sold out in 30 minutes. So it's now on back order with a pre-sale available for the next batch. They're $40.
Wait a minute. He hunts Big Bird?
I'm down with that.
Is that what you said?
Now that would be something, wouldn't
he's
it?
He's a big bird hunter.
Being a big bird hunter.
Hasn't found him yet.
The Snuffleupagus,
it's like Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner.
Big birds are like, ah!
The Detroit Zoo has welcomed its first ever baby gorilla. So for the first time in its 96-year history, the Detroit Zoo has welcomed this baby gorilla. It was born yesterday after a smooth pregnancy for the proud mother, whose name is Bandia. The baby does not have a name yet and has not been tested for gender. They're going to give mommy and baby time to bond before they're ready to return to the public display.
Oh, he's a cute little guy.
Have you seen, like, on my TikTok, I get these for some reason, the baby gorillas bothering their dads.
Yes, I love those.
Aren't those I mean, they're so
it's the best. They
human.
Smack them in the head.
Yeah, they're just bugging the crap out of their dad.
The dad does the, like, flex at them, like,
poking them and poking them and poking them.
That's so the best.
An Olympic skateboarder says that the medals are not as high quality as you would think. Have you seen this
story? It lasts about a week.
Yeah, we've all seen the shiny Olympic medals being handed out in Paris. But Nijah Huston is a skateboarder who earned bronze in the men's street competition. Says his medal is already showing some wear and tear just a few days later. He posted pictures saying they look great when they're brand new, but after letting it sit on my skin with some sweat for a little bit and letting my friends wear it over the weekend, they're apparently not as high quality as you would think.
I don't like that.
I don't either. I would definitely not bite it. At that, we were talking about biting the medals. Like, if it's poor quality and it's just going to wear out, I'm not biting that thing.
Am I the only one who, I was not a big Noah Lyles fan to begin with because I just don't like boisterous show-offs. But am I the only one thinking that he's kind of a bad guy for the whole COVID thing and not telling anyone that he had it and then exposing?
Well, I think the Olympic committee was well aware of it.
Yeah, but competitors and just, you know.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, there's a lot to it, right? I understand it. I think every athlete has been in that spot where you're sick and you still want to do your job, right? You still, like, you don't know if you're ever going to be back in the Olympics. I mean, I get that drive, right? I get that that's the internal drive of an elite athlete. And at the same time, you could be, if you spread that, damaging the chances of other athletes to win a silver or a gold.
Yeah. Exactly.
Again, you know, we all know that for these particular people, it's not like the beginning stages of COVID where we were super worried about what the effect was. We kind of know, especially for the elite athletes, all right, you're probably going to be okay, but look at how much it diminished him.
Yeah.
If by the people who have it sticking around the Olympic Village, still moving in and amongst other athletes, if that ends up getting passed to another athlete who then is diminished and doesn't win their gold, I'd rather you just take one. And say, I'm going to sit out because I tested positive.
I agree.
But I understand that drive. I think, you know, we've all been there.
All right. Disney is planning to crack down on password sharing in earnest next month. The company announced late last summer that it planned to crack down on password sharing in 2024. Then in January, Disney warned subscribers of Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus that it was updating the subscriber agreement and imposing limitations on sharing your account outside of your household.
Did it hurt Netflix?
I think it actually helped them. I think more people signed up, but it's a bummer because I was letting my mom use my Netflix password and now she doesn't get to use Netflix.
Poor thing. Rach has a summer cold.
I know. It's, sorry, guys.
No, it's fine. I just feel bad for you.
Yeah. I feel like hope not.
Say, none of that was a shot at you either,
Rach. It's like people who come to work and they're sick.
Do their thing.
It's like, oh no.
Just cause she wants her medal.
Yeah.
My medal that's going to get all worn out. Do you guys know what Polly Pocket is?
Have
you
ever heard
of Polly Pocket? Oh boy, do I.
Okay.
Man, my daughter had so many of those.
Same.
More than 30 years after the Polly Pocket craze swept the nation, a two-story home has been constructed to be an exact oversized replica of the pocket-sized doll's home and is now available as an Airbnb in Massachusetts. It looks so cool. I would love to stay at a place like this.
It's
going
to be impossible to get into that place.
You're absolutely right. Bookings open on August 21st if you would like to try. And my final story here, Dolce & Gabbana has launched a $108 cologne for dogs. It's called Fifi.
It's called what?
Fifi. It's alcohol-free and has been certified safe to use with animals. So while it follows safety regulations, some veterinarians are still saying it might not be the best idea to use it on your dog. It does not say exactly what it smells like.
Dog.
Like. I wonder if it like smells like human cologne or
it's got to be meant for us, right? Not meant for them.
I think it's probably a, yeah, you're right, Wheels. It's for us. It's a publicity stunt. So people talk about Dolce & Gabbana. I highly doubt people are like, oh, I need to scent my pet, but it's available. It's $108 for a 3.4-ounce bottle.
Dogs do get smelly sometimes.
They do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, is like, I'm obviously a cat person. I love dogs too, but sometimes those dogs just, they don't smell so great.
That's why we give them baths.
Yep. That's true. I agree. Yeah, that's a good point. Good old bath fixes that pretty quick.
Thank you, Dave. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 351. Wheels, let's do a preview of the Royal Series.
Yeah, it's a quick little weird series, right? It's a two-game series, so only Friday and Saturday. No game on Sunday, so it's a very rare thing for a major league team to have an off day on a Sunday.
Hmm.
Just doesn't happen very much, but it's just, this is just a quirk of the new scheduling that came in with the new CBA. So two-game series, cool pitching matchups in the sense that they're very evenly matched in terms of the kind of pitcher, right? Miles Michaelis tonight is facing off against veteran Michael Lorenzen. They're both guys that throw strikes, don't strike a lot of people out. They're not overpowering by any means. So
maybe
again,
a lot of offense.
Could be. And then tomorrow, similar matchup. Andre Pallante and Michael Walker are pitching, and they are very similar. Little, not exactly the same deliveries, but same kind of repertoire, same ideas. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays. And I was talking about this on the video that I did for the series, but the Cardinals are two games over 500. The Royals are 12 games over 500. And the biggest difference between the two teams might just be one player. Like, that may just be almost the entire difference, and that's Bobby Witt Jr. If you look at the vast majority of the roster, look at the rotations. The one area, you know, the Royals have one guy that's kind of better than most of the Cardinals, but he's similar to Sonny and Cole Reagans, who's a hard-throwing lefty that strikes people out. But the rosters all around are very similar. If you look at the lineup, outside of Bobby Witt Jr. standing out, they're very similar. There are a lot of the guys that are very same kinds of numbers. But then you got Bobby Witt Jr., who's basically a unicorn. So he is the fastest runner in baseball.
Wow.
Nobody is faster. He is in the 100th percentile of sprint speed. He is in the top 1% of offensive production, defensive production, and base running.
Phew.
And again, you know, if you, it's not an exact thing that translates, but if you look at something like wins above replacement, he is already at 8.3. Like, an all-star is a 5, and the season's not over, and he's an 8.3. So think about that. This is why I say this. He's an 8.5 win player essentially so far. The difference between these two teams is 10 games. Basically, the difference is that Bobby Witt Jr. is not a Cardinal.
In a very real way.
And that's how good he is, and that's also how much you miss having a guy like that.
How
right?
long has he been that guy?
I mean, he's 24?
Wow.
He's only in his third major league season. You know, this is his third year. So
he's still making the minimum? Or
he's got a long-term contract. They gave him an extension, so he's got a guaranteed deal, you know, moving forward for the next 10 years or so. But Davey's hitting .349 in a time where batting average is amongst the worst that it's been in the modern era, right? You have to go back to the 60s for the batting average to be as low as it is for the league now. So he's hitting .349, 33 doubles, 10 triples, 22 homers, 25 steals, 80-something runs batted in, and he's got a really good chance at winning a gold glove. Like, this guy is a freak, and that's interesting to me because the teams are so similar except for one guy. Mm. That one, and that was Albert for the Cardinals for so many years, right? How many years were they similar to others, but you had Albert? It'd be fascinating. I think the Cardinals would love to have a guy that's like that. Come on now.